Okay.
All right, is it going? Thank you. Okay, Ravosai. Okay, we're in the middle of, just want to run through the rest of this funny Ramah. Ramah brings out all these things that some people say are usher, but he thinks are only chumra b'alma. So you have to figure out why people say it's usher and why he says it's only chumra b'alma. We went through the first one, which is the most complicated one, which had a lot of really kolosor kulin yonim. Let's go to the second one. The second one we read, that you can't mix the water from washing the fleshik dishes and the water from washing the milchik dishes and feed them to your animal, because it's Isra Hanav Basar B'chalav. And here we have a fundamental machlokas. What's the metzias? Meaning, kli rishon or kli sheni? Right? The Shach says, right here, in Sifkatan Yud Tes, Haynik she'idicham b'mayim rotchen v'irvan kach rotchen. If it was boiling hot water, that's what's also Rahanah, which is mamish bishel. Mamish bishel to kli rishon, boiling hot in a kli rishon. Then it's mamish bishel. The Rabbi Kiv Eger, Sakasha, which we won't get into, but he quotes from Minchas Yaakov. The Minchas Yaakov, quoting Rabbi Kiv Eger here, says, no way. It's talking about when it's not hot. When it's not hot. Yeah, maybe it's warm or something, but it's not hot. And therefore, it's not derech bishel. So here we have the second case, right? What's the second case? Eruv Hamayim. Mixing together the water, we have two different ideas of the scenario. According to the Shach, it is Rotchen. And according to the Minchas Yaakov, it is...
Both Mayim is Rotchen according to the Shach?
Yeah. Yeah. So, now, of course, each of these presents its own challenge. According to the Shach, we understand why it should be Usher. You're Taka cooking meat with milk. So why is it only Chumra B'Yalma? According to the Minchas Yaakov, we understand why it's Mutter. Because it's not Bishel, it's mixing of coal. That's not Usher B'Noah. So why are there even some who are Machmir? So for the Shach, that Nicha Das HaMachmirim. But why do we hold? Why is it really Mutter? Right? I understand those are aser. Your mom is cooking leftover meat with leftover milk. So why is it really mutter? So really, the Aruch HaShulchan is the one who most goes through each of these scenarios and goes through all the possibilities. Says the Aruch HaShulchan that even though it is boiling hot, he says that first of all, it's not always going to be boiling hot. But even if it would be boiling hot, so here, based on the Aruch HaShulchan, you could just say that even if it's boiling hot, who says it's basar b'chalav? Usually, either the plates will not have mamushes of meat and milk in them, right? Meaning not all plates have a lot of meat left on them. Maybe they're just the plates, and if you just wash the plates, then it's no problem. It's a concept called nap or not. The water you wash the dishes in does not really become fleishik or ikar din, or maybe there's bitl b'shishim, right? Even there's a few scraps, a few drops left on the fleishik plates, a few drops left on the milchik plates, that's bitl b'shishim in the water, and it's really not going to be a problem. So therefore, you'd have to say that according to the Shach, even though it is boiling, not to mention the fact that even if you mix them boiling, you know, how do you mix them? Maybe if you pour them both into a klisheni, then it doesn't count. But because even if it's boiling, you have to say that it's probably probably 60 times the actual meat or milk. Right? If you wash dishes, they wash dishes in a big pan. Right? What's left on the dishes? A lot of stuff left on the dishes, the side dishes and the gravy. How much actual meat and milk is left on these dishes? Remember, even nowadays, when you wash your dishes, you don't put with like giant pieces of food. Right? It's just like the dirt on the dishes. So that's probably 60 times the meat and the milk, if there's any meat and milk left. And therefore, it's not really going to be basar b'chalav. You know, the odds are very slim. Not to mention the fact that it's not always in a kli rishon. And it's often not
in a Kli Rishon. Okay, although the Shach Tzvi,
even if it isn't a Kli Rishon. So therefore, really it's a Chumer B'Yalma, because it's not unlikely you Basar B'Cholov. But some people are Machmir when you mix it very hot, just in case it's Basar B'Cholov. According to Michas Yaakov, you're mixing it cold.
So then, Nicha, the Motor Alpidin. Of course it's Motor Alpidin. When you mix it cold, it's not really dark Bishol Asr Torah. Right, remember, we said it's only Basar B'Cholov the Raisa if it's through cooking. When you mix it hot, if you mix it cooled off, then it's not really Basar B'Cholov the Raisa. And if it's not Basar B'Cholov the Raisa, it's Motor Bana. So why does anyone even Asr?
So, the Michas Yaakov says,
so why do some say it's Asr? So he brings a big chiddush, says the Michas Yaakov, these people hold that even though it's mutar b'nana from Basar B'Cholov d'Rabbanan, lechatchila you shouldn't make Basar B'Cholov d'Rabbanan to be nana from it. It's only if you have Basar B'Cholov d'Rabbanan you can be nana. But lechatchila you shouldn't do it.
Say, the chiddush is that it's Asr lechatchila lasos Basar B'Cholov d'Rabbanan kedei lehanos minenu. So look, if it got mixed up, it would have to be motorbana. Because it's cold, it's possible called drabana. But there's a big chiddush these machmirim, which is not the din, it's just a chumrah. This chumrah chiddush is that even though possible called drabana you can sell or feed to your dogs, lechatchila, you shouldn't make it. That's only if you're stuck. But lechatchila, you should avoid it. Okay, so that's the machmirim. The next case is, so here we have machlokes about the cases, and either way we can nasr. Yeah?
Can I comment?
Sure.
On the bottom of my shore, whatever Haggadah something something, it said that in the actual Aruch HaShulchan, Ezra Aruch, it actually is the Shara in the cold water, Me'ez La'ez. And so L'char, I don't know, L'char then it's similar to the Kibush and Malicha, it's like these quasi bishuls, and it's similar to the Machmir at the beginning, the quote at the beginning of the Dark Day Moshe there. Like on the
Derech
Bishul, those who are Machmer when it's not
Derech Bishul. Okay, I'm not sure I'm totally following. Because you're saying those who say even when it's not Derech Bishul, it's still Asr Bana Midrabana. Maybe that day that we don't hold like.
These things are born in the Dark and Moshe right at the beginning of the Sinah.
Right, they are.
Or the beginning of Sefer Katan, he talks about the Kibush and Maluach.
Yes, and he does have this man da'amar that the Mordechai quotes that it's Asr, I see what you're saying. Maybe it's just those who hold that there's an Isra, no, it must be called the Rabbanan. Okay, that's not what the Michas Yaakov says, but certainly you could say, or this is the minority Shita.
And that goes well with that Haggadah, that the Aruch actually specified it, that it's Me'ez La'ez sitting there. Because if it's just an Indian of whatever, so even if it's mamish cold, not
right. Okay, I hear the Taina. Okay, that's also a good possibility. Great. Okay, third case. The third case is, right, the shampoo pot. Right, you're not allowed to use the shampoo pot for food. Why? Because it's made with ashes. In the old days, right, ashes was the detergent, and those ashes would have drips of meat and drips of milk on it. So, now, what is the chumrah? Right?
What is the das machmirim? The das machmirim is that there's basar b'cholov in the shampoo. So the pot is treif.
What one thing do the machmirim then have to explain, which the Shach deals with, if the shampoo is basar b'cholov because it's made with ashes? I don't know what ashes have. Ashes have some detergent. I don't know if anyone figured it out since last time. And anyone have looked it up on the internet. But if the shampoo is basar b'cholov, then what question might you ask? How are you allowed to make this shampoo and use it to wash your hair in the first place, right? How are you allowed to be nana for the shampoo in the first place? That's the Shach, yes? And the Shach gives us something which is an important principle, because it could come up in a lot of modern-day cases, says the Shach, but the shampoo is mutar b'hana'a, because let's understand how they make the shampoo. I don't know anything about shampoos nowadays. But in the shampoo, right, there's always the active ingredient. What's the active ingredient? The active ingredient is the ashes. right? Because ashes are, I don't know, they have something which is a cleansing agent. What's the main ingredient that makes the ashes in an oven hundreds of years ago? What would the ashes be made from? From the wood, right, that you burn in the oven, right? So it's basically wood ash is the ingredient in the shampoo. You also have basar b'chalav that's seeped into it. But that's not the active ingredient. The what's called a blia, the absorption of basar b'chalav, does not make your hair any cleaner. It's the wood ash that makes your hair cleaner. So what's the principle? Says the Shach, the principle is, because you're not nene from the blias basar b'chalav shabo, only from the wood ash in the, and the water, right? Meaning when you shampoo your hair, if that shampoo is a blias, just let me give you an example. If I were to have a, what else is asr b'hana? Let's take basar b'chalav, right? I have a blia of basar b'chalav in my football, right? What happened? My football fell into a pot of basar b'chalav. It absorbed the taste of basar b'chalav. I can still play football with it. Why? I'm not nene from, it has basar b'chalav in it, but I'm not nene from the basar b'chalav. I'm nene from the football, right? The fact that it's basar b'chalav doesn't add any hanah to me. Likewise here. It's not that you need the basar b'chalav as ingredients in your shampoo. Meat and milk spills do not have any chemicals that help shampoo. Just wood ash does. So your nene from the ashes. The fact the ashes had spills of chicken soup and spills of milk on them doesn't give you any extra hana. So you're not nene from the basar b'chalav shabo. The principle is, if something has absorbs an iser hana, it's mutter to get hana from the thing as long as you're not getting hana from the iser from the basar b'chalav inside. You can't eat it, because if I eat it, I'm eating whatever's inside it. Right? Let's say basar b'chalav gets absorbed into carrots. Right? The carrot falls into a basar b'chalav stew. Now the carrot has a blia, has a taste of basar b'chalav. I can't eat the carrot because I'm also eating the basar b'chalav. But I could, I don't know what you do with carrots. I could put the carrot in my snowman for a nose because I'm not getting any more benefit from the fact that this carrot has taste of milk and meat in it than if it was a raw carrot. Right? It's all the same. And that's the principle of the, that's the principle of Shach, and this is generally true. Whenever there's anything which has some Isra Anah inside it, it's okay for me to benefit from all the parts that aren't Asra Anah, as long as I'm not getting extra benefit from what is Asra Anah. That's a general principle. Okay, so that's the Das HaMachmir. Why is it really Mutter? Mutter Al-Pidin, remember, the Ramah says it's Mutter Al-Pidin, it's only a Chomer for the Machmir. It's only for the Mahadrin. It's really totally mutter if someone's mekel, they haven't lost anything. Why do you think it's really mutter? Taka, this has basar b'chalav in it.
Isn't it critical that also that aspect he says that it's not a tavar shalchil anymore, or it's just a tangential point?
No, that's not going to make a heter. Let us say, let's give the example, my football fell into a basar b'chalav stew. My football now is a blia basar b'chalav. And I have very bad aim. And then again, my football falls into my soup, my kosher soup. Now the soup is treif, because the football took the taste of basar b'chalav and then gave it into the kosher stew. Keep in mind, a taste that gets absorbed in a non-food is still a problem. What's my proof? I'll tell you a very pashut proof. Let's say a goy cooked basar b'chalav in a pot. The taste of basar b'chalav is absorbed in the pot, which is not a food item. Nonetheless, if I cook that, if I cook soup in that pot, it's treif. The taste goes into a non-food item that goes back into a food item and makes it treif.
You can't eat it, but could you get enough?
But we're not... Yeah, but the Machmirim just say you can't use this pot for eating. What do they mean the pot is treif? You can't cook kosher food in the pot, so it'll make it treif. All the Machmirim say is that the time of basar b'chalav went into the ashes, from the ashes it went into the shampoo pot. Don't cook soup in your shampoo pot, to the time basar b'chalav will go in your soup.
But I thought the side question you were just doing right now is just the chla.
That's the side question. Yeah. No, I'm done with the side question.
Right, no, but I'm saying, look,
how can I use it for shampoo?
Because wasn't the fact that it's not darj al-khil a critical aspect of it, or that was...
for this aspect, yes.
We just mentioned the fact that it's the non-enemigo
basis. Ah, why? Because that only applies to hana. I can be nana from something and not be nana from like the taste inside it. I can't eat something and not eat the taste inside it. When I eat something, I'm eating all of it. That's really the difference. What?
Not darj al-khil, you would eat the shampoo.
Okay, but it still wouldn't be l'chachila. Or it may not be lechatchila. That would be.
If you were got enough from something where you weren't nana miguf iser, but it was a davar shalchila, that would be fine.
Yeah, as long as I'm not eating it. He really means as long as you're not eating it. He doesn't mean it's a davar shel. Yeah, I think that's pretty clear. I'll give you a classic example. If I this isn't the exact example. Let's say I had a bli of basar b'chalav into my bread, right? I sell the bread to the guy for the regular price of bread. So I think that would be okay. So I'm not nana from the bli of basar b'chalav. I'm just getting the same price the bread was before the basar b'chalav. Okay, now I understand what you're saying, but I think that was too meduyak. Now, so why would it really be mutter? Anyone have any idea why it would really be mutter? Yeah, again, it doesn't say anywhere on the page, interestingly. Just that's a chomer b'yalav pashat. There's not a real problem up he did. And the Aruch HaShulchan and others go through it. Anyone have any ideas? Why do you think this might really be mutter?
Didn't you just say it already?
No, not the shampoo.
Was it actually
the cooking in the pot.
Is it enough?
Why is it mutter alpidin to cook kosher food?
It's like an extra step removed.
In this pot. Now, you're right, but no matter how many steps you move, the blee of treif is still treif.
It's always.
Yes, the blee of treif stays treif no matter how many steps. That's a rule. Anyone think of how this might be different from other cases of a bli of basar b'chalav?
Is there tam, though?
What?
Is there tam with ash?
I mean, yes, but...
Does it have tam with
tam? Yeah, the ashes give things a bad tam, right? Ashes ruin the taste of things. The rule is, when you mix basar and chalav, it's only considered bishul basar b'chalav and asr if it mixes in a good taste. If it mixes in a bad taste, that's not basar b'chalav. That's the heter called notzin tam lefgam. A bad taste doesn't count. So, for example, what?
Even la'achila.
For example, if I had, let's say I had, I'm just making something up. I had apple juice. And I cooked, I'm not sure how this works. I cooked bacon in my apple juice, and it gave a bad taste to my apple juice. Then it would still be kosher.
Apple juice.
Yeah. The apple juice, because it just got a bad taste of treif. Or let's say another example, my Yom, we'll get to it. Let's say I put meat and milk dishes in the same basin of boiling water with soap. Then we pass them, they're still kosher. Because the soap ruins the taste, and a bad taste doesn't become basar b'chalav. So therefore, Yoruch HaShulchan says two reasons.
Is mutter l'chatchila
on the same basis? It is not mutter l'chatchila to make it on purpose, it's not mutter l'chatchila to make it on purpose. But over here, you didn't make the Nosan Tam Lefgam on purpose. How did the Nosan Tam Lefgam happen? You had ashes on your stove, you spilled some chicken soup, you spilled some milk. It was Nosan Tam Lefgam. That, you spilled by accident. Once you spill by accident, it's v'diyavet. Right? You're not purposely mixing the meat and milk with ashes. It's just spilled. You'd prefer to have ashes without any spillage. Right? Every time you spill, you lose money because you're losing groceries.
So do you have to use other ashes if you can?
It's a good question, meaning how far do you have to go l'chatchila? Do you have to use other ashes if you can? Probably not. Probably once it's spilled, it's spilled, it's v'diyavet. Okay, so here there are two main reasons. Number one is the nosein tam lefgam, meaning the ashes ruin the taste of the basar and the chalav. Whatever spills on the ashes gets a bad taste, and therefore meat, chicken soup spilled on the ashes, but it's a bad taste chicken soup. Now milk spills on the ashes, but it's a bad taste milk, a bad taste chicken soup. And the Aruch HaShulchan also suggests that since the ashes are in a big fire on the stove, probably whatever chicken soup or milk spills there just gets like boiled away by the fire and probably doesn't even give a taste. Okay, and also the spills of basar and chalav get evaporated by the fire. It's sort of like kashering, right? These ashes are in a fire. The fire kashers the ashes by burning out all the basar b'chalav in them. Right? You can't burn out the ashes in them. Fire makes ashes, but it burns out everything else. So therefore, he says it's really not a problem.
Does it matter if someone personally likes the taste or wants...
Of ashes?
Yeah.
That's a great question. What if you personally like the taste? Probably not. Probably it's general. Yeah.
If we assume that you only have the first reason... Would there be an issue of being if, I mean, he got the basar and the chal, the ashes from that stove where presumably people cook every day. So if you, would it be a problem to cook there because the heat is being, you know, added, ashes are adding heat?
No, because since it's no sin tam lufgam, that's not called bishul basar b'chalav. Basically, nisinas tam lufgam is not called derech bishul. It's not considered a maisa bishul.
If we said that a major ingredient in shampoo was basar b'chalav, and it has nothing to do with the taste, wouldn't be asar?
If a major ingredient in shampoo was basar b'chalav, now it depends how you make the shampoo. Meaning, if first you mix the basar and chalav and make them taste good, and then mix it with other things, you have a problem. But if a major ingredient, let's say you purposely make a shampoo with a basar and chalav recipe, but the way you do the recipe is you mix the basar and the chalav and disgusting things all at once and cook it up, then that would not be an isser of basar and chalav because it's no satan of God. Now, as Oren pointed out, it might not be l'chachila to do that on purpose. Because maybe l'chachila we shouldn't rely do things that are nosedam of gam, but ikar din it would, you know, but b'di'evit it would be mutter.
Nosedam of gam is a factor even when you're not going to eat.
Correct. Because when the Torah says losavashal gedi b'chalev imo, Chazal understand it means in the normal way of bishul. The normal way of bishul is for things to taste good. So shampoo is not the normal way. Now you might have thought on your own losavashal means for industrial products also, but that's not how Chazal understand. They understand losavashal, don't cook it in the way of normal mixing meat and milk with a good taste. For most of the Plasha, but even without that, that's how they understand Derech Bishul. Derech Bishul Asra Torah means only Bishul Kedarga Asra Torah. Right? Okay. The fourth case is using the built-in urns. Remember the built-in urns? I'm not going to read the Ramah again. We read it once, right? They had built-in urns, their ovens. And what do the Machirim say? Once chicken soup splashes on it, and then once chicken's milk splashes on it, it might become treif. So, the built-in urns, number four, the built-in urn in the oven, don't use it because who knows what's flashed on it becomes treif. Here the Darkei Moshe says, and a very important principle, there are many reasons why we might think to be mako on this, the truth be told, but the Darkei Moshe says an important principle here, which is a kolator kuladik principle. He says, if I can find the right part, does it seem to here? A second. Tam niralim shem de'en l'chachosh l'hachzik reyes abadover de'lo chazinan. What is he thinks a kolator kula principle? Right? What do the Osrim say? The Osrim say meat and milk splash on it. What does the Ramah say? He says a principle. Ein lochosh lahachzik reyes of a makom lo chazina. What does that mean? Reyes says a weakness, a problem. We're not choshish for a problem if we don't see anything. Right? What this means is that just because something could have happened, safek, basar b'chalav is generally lochomer. Just because something could have happened doesn't mean it's a safek iser. Suffolk Isser means something happened, but we don't know if it was Usser or Mutter. If we didn't see anything happen, we just think something might have happened, that's called nervousness. That's not called Suffolk Isser, right? You can always be nervous something might have happened. But just because you're nervous something might have happened does not make that halachically relevant. There are halachos, the halacha says we only take into account things that we have a reason to think happened. In Lumda's terminology, this is called a latest ha-suffolk. There's only a suffolk, there's a latest of something gives birth to the suffolk. And this is a principle we'll see a few times in your day. Says the, why is it really mutter? Alpidin, and the Ramah even says in his days they don't use them. Says the Darkei Moshe, because of the rule of Ein Machzikim Reisa. Right? We're not Machzik Reisa. Machzik means to assume. We don't assume a problem unless something happens that might or might not be a problem. If something happens, and it might or might not be treif, we have to be machmer and misafik and say it's treif. But if we didn't see anything, we just think something might have happened, we don't assume problems. If we don't see anything, we don't assume problems. That's a rule in Kol HaTorah Kula.
And what about stoking coals under a guy's...
No, so there, we know he's cooking something. We just don't know what he's cooking. Meaning we know something happened. There's food cooking. We just don't know which food. So that's a suffix. We know you're cooking food. We just don't know what kind of food. That's a real suffix. But over here, we have urns there. We think Bas Bechalav might have splashed onto it. We didn't see anything splashed onto it. We didn't see anything. If we didn't see anything, we don't assume something happened. That's different than if something's happening, are we choshesh for what it's what's inside the pot? That's not assuming from thin air. That's, I'm soaking the coals, I'm cooking this pot, I don't know what's in the pot. That could be a reasonable isser. But over here, I'm going to say this urn is treif. Even nowadays, you have a tea kettle on your, remember tea kettles in the old days on the stoves? Maybe your grandparents had tea kettles? If you have a tea kettle on the stove, maybe once you were frying schnitzel and it splashed onto it, and once you were boiling milk and it splashed onto it, and maybe the tea kettle's treif. The answer is, if you saw it happen, that's one thing. But we don't say maybe if we didn't see anything happen. We don't assume things happened if we didn't see them happen.
Even if it's very likely?
So there's a prechadosh who says, if something's very likely, then we do. If there's a limit, right? You can't just be an ostrich and hide your head in the sand. But here, it's not very likely. Who knows what spilled on it, what didn't? Especially since you get into halachic details. How much spilled on it, and when did it spill? If there were 24 hours between the meat and the milk spilling on it, then it wouldn't become treif. So it's very not pashat. And the Ramah says, nowadays, we don't even cook right next to those things anyway. But you're right, there's a limit. You can't say something happens 50% of the time, but I'm going to close my eyes and not see it and pretend that I won't be choshesh. But if something might have happened...
Does the prechadosh give a number?
No, he does not. So this is the four strange cases in Siv Zayin. Now we're going to go on to a little more Bas Bechalav and then get to the very complicated sugya of milk in the stomach of a calf. So, the Sif Zayin. Hamavashel shlil b'cholav chayiv. If you cook, what's a shlil? A fetus, right? Meaning it sounds weird to us, but yeah, if you shecht female cows, a decent percentage of the time, they'll have a fetus. Not like a hen, which will always have eggs inside, but a decent percentage of the time, there'll be a fetus inside. And you can eat it. It's probably very good to eat, nice and soft. If you shecht if you cook a fetus in chalav, you're chayiv d'oraisa. That's an issue d'oraisa. A fetus is considered a real basar. Why? It's a real small animal. However, v'chein ha'ochlo, and if you eat it, you're chayiv malkus. Aval hamavashel shalya. If you cook, a shalya is a it's some sort of like placenta, like or sac that the baby's in, which are all attached to each other. Right, so it's like when you have a fetus, the fetus has this sac that surrounds it, and that is not edible. It's not good to eat because it's not real meat. It's just some like very tough kind of organ. Or another tough inedible part of the animal, like the skin, v'gidin, or the tendons or sinews, va'atzamos, and the bones, v'ikari karnayim v'tlafayim harakim. And the roots of the horns and the hooves that are soft, meaning even, for sure the hard part of the horns and the hooves are not edible. Even the roots of them, the bottom of them, which are a little soft, they're still not edible. They're softer than the hooves are super hard. So inside there's a part that's a little softer. The horns are very hard. Inside there's a part that's a little softer, but it's still not edible. It's still too hard to be edible. Potter, v'chein ha'ochlam potter. You're potter for cooking them, and you are potter for eating them, because they're not considered basar. The basar is only the meat of the animal, the edible parts of the animal. The inedible parts of the animal are not considered to be basar, and therefore 99.9% of all mafarshim assume there's no issur d'oraisa on the, or maybe in this case 100%. There's no issur d'oraisa on the inedible parts of the animal. There's just a gzeir drabana not to cook them or eat them with milk, because someone could be confused. Here also, this is a kind of bas b'chol drabanan that's not only asr b'achilo, also asr b'bishel, which makes sense to us because it reminds us of seif vav, right? Clearly, he means it's asr to cook and to eat, because he says it's asr to cook and to eat. Ha'av b'vashel potter v'ha'ochel potter. Clearly saying by b'vashel, I meant literal cooking. And now I'm saying ochel, which is eating. They're both potter midoraisa, but asr midorabanan. And this fits what we said in the previous seif, which is that even though chicken is drabanan, they let you cook it, just didn't let you eat it. And even though pork, they let you cook, they just didn't let you eat. That's because it's different species. Here it's from the same species, right? From the same animal. We shecht the cow, the meat is doraisa, the skin and the bones are drabanan. since it's from the same animal, there are more machmir, a more chomer basal called drabanan, and it's usher to cook me drabanan and usher to eat me drabanan. Okay, ches. Ches we already learned. Right? So we're up to tes. Okay, tes is a big sugya. Betzalel, can you take the board? Because that way I could have a new board for tes, which is a new sugya. This sugya is the status of. Now, let's review. There's two kinds of milk you could find in a dead bovine. One is if you shecht the mother. If you shecht the mother, there'll be milk in the udder, which was waiting to come out. That milk, we learn in Sif Vav, is not milchik. Midoraisa, but midrabanan, we treat it as milchik. Then, that is chalav mesa, chalav from a dead animal, which is that organ, the udder is called the kal, kaf. Lamed, and there's a whole simon about how to eat the chal since it's meat and it has this drabanan milk inside it. Okay. Nowadays I don't think we eat it. Most people. I bet like some like old Yemenites or someone do. The normal restaurants don't serve it. Then there's another case. You could shecht the mother and find the milk still in her udder, or if you shecht the calf, you'll find the milk in its stomach. Right? This calf nurses milk. The milk is in its stomach. It takes a little while to digest. If you check the calf and it nursed recently, you'll find milk in its stomach. What's the status of milk in the stomach of a shechted calf? Right, that's the question. So here, it was not so clear. The Gemara in Chulin points out, remember there it says in the Kan Kodem Chazara, Kan Acher Chazara. There's a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. It says, originally they thought that the milk in the stomach, in the calf's stomach, had the halachic status of the calf. It was considered part of the calf. Therefore, if the calf was treif, the milk was treif. If the calf was a tikrovas akum, a carbon tovod zara, the milk was a carbon tovod zara. The originally thought it had the status of the calf. That was before Chazara. They changed their mind. That was not it was a good svar according to what they thought originally, but according to the halachic system of the maskana of Shas, it's not a very good svar. Why would the milk in its stomach have the status of the calf? It's not part of the calf's body. It was just eaten by the calf. And in general, we say anything found in the stomach nowadays, after the Tanoim changed their mind, right? Anything which is found in the stomach of any dead animal is not part of that animal. It's just an external thing that was eaten, right? So, you know, whatever it might be, what's in the stomach of a fish, what's in the stomach of a cow, what's in the stomach of anything, does not have the status of the animal that was inside. It has its own status. Okay, so that's exceedingly clear. The Kodem Chazara. What did they say about this milk in the stomach? Milk, and anyone know what we call the stomach where the milk is? Right, how many stomachs do cows have? Four. Four. It's a good thing that you don't have to know Hilchos Treifos. Cows have four stomachs. In general, all the, like, male gera, the ruminants, who chew their cud, have four stomachs. They need a lot of stomachs and chew their cud to digest grass, because grass is very, very hard to digest. Something with cellulose, I don't know, I'm not a scientist. Anyway, they have four stomachs. The calves only need one stomach, because digesting mother's milk is obviously a lot easier than digesting grass. So the milk gets digested in the keva. Okay, so the milk in the keva of a slaughtered calf, or an unslaughtered calf for that matter. Kodin Chazara, they thought it had the status of the calf.
What
does it mean? Not leaning basr b'chalav, but leaning in the velos, utrefos, and behema tamea. Like, for example, you had a kosher cow, and a calf nursed, and then you killed that calf, you know, by shooting it. The calf is the vela, they thought the milk in its stomach was the vela. You shecht the calf and find a hole in the lung, the calf is trefa, they thought the milk was trefa. If a piglet nursed from the cow, then you slaughter the piglet, since the pig is treif, meaning behemoth tamea, the milk was treif. You know, if you slaughter to a avodah zarah, since, okay, you get the point. They didn't think it was flesha, lo'ad kidekach, but they thought it had the status of the animal it came from. Okay, that is irrelevant to us, because we are post-Chazara Jews. What about post-Chazara? One thing we're very clear. Achar Chazara, right? This is all before the Tanaim changed their minds.
Achar Chazara, which means when the Tanam changed their minds and wrote the halacha that we follow. So clearly it doesn't have the status of the calf. But here we have a bit of a stira. Right? What status does it have? Here you can have two options. Right? Does it have the status of milk? Just like before the calf swallowed it. Right? Before the calf swallowed it.
What did it have the status of milk? It was milk. So it was milk. Now the calf swallowed it, so it's still milk. It's regular milk. What does it mean, regular milk? That it's milchik. And if the mother was treif, then it's treif. Right? I mean, there are two enough to mean it's being milked. Number one, that it's milchik. Number two, let's say the mother was treif. Or let's say it nursed from a pig. A calf nursed from a pig. Right? Then the milk would be treif. That is one possibility. What's the other possibility? The other possibility is, let's think about this. What happens to the milk? It sits in the stomach, and what happens to it? It gets digested. Okay, it gets digested. Obviously, all the important nutrients go into the bloodstream of the calf, and that's the whole biology of how the calf lives, right? But what happens to the end of the milk when it gets digested? It turns into?
Excrement,
right? Meaning it goes out the other side, right? Eventually, right? Now, clearly, here's the issue. When it was in the calf's mouth, as it was coming like out of the other udder into its mouth, it was milk, clearly. Right, if you would take some out of the calf's mouth, that would be regular milk. By the time it comes out the other end, excuse me for not specifying what that end is called, by the time it comes out the other end, it's clearly excrement, which means it's not edible. Since it's not edible, it is kosher parif, meaning it's not a food, so it can't have any status. When does it change from being milk to being, what's the word for excrement? Perish in Hebrew, right? It's a word in the Tanakh, right? V'zeirisi perish al p'nechem, perish chagechem, or even in the Chumash, right? Es orav yes b'samav yes dama al persha yisrof, it says about the paraduma, right? You have to burn it even with the excrement that's inside its large intestine. And persha in Aramaic. Persha is just, that's the digital word when they say in Aramaic. They turn perish into pirsha. Okay, so when does it go from milk to pirsha? So that's the question. You could say, you know, when it goes from milk, it changes from milk to pirsha, when it leaves the stomach and goes into the intestines. In the intestines, it's pirsha, but in the stomach, it's still good milk. Or you could say, no, once it gets swallowed into the stomach, it is now has the halachic status of pirsha. Right. So that's the question: is it milk or does it have no status, meaning pirsha, just like later when it is excreted? Mismara, you have to draw the line someplace. You have to draw the line someplace. It starts as milk, it comes in as milk, and goes out as perish. So in between, what is it? Is it still milk, or has it already become perish? So, it depends on your Gersa in the Gemara. There are three opinions. What are the three opinions? Exactly. What do the Ref of the Rambam say?
They say it's
totally mutter. They say pirsha. It is kosher pariv. Remember, there are two nafkaminas. A, it's no longer milking, it's pariv. B, even if it milked from a treif mother, it turned kosher. So if it was treif milk, because remember, milk from a treif animal, from a treif mother, is treif. If it was treif milk, it turns kosher, and milk turned pariv. Who's the opposite of them?
Rashi.
Rashi says that it is chalav. Right? No, it's still milk, which means it's still milchik. And if it nursed from a treif mother, it's still treif. And Rabbeinu Tam makes a pshara. Right? Why does he make a pshara? If you look at the Gaon Kulin. Where's Kulin? If you look at the Gemara in Kulin, the Gemara in Chulin says that on the one hand it says 1 second. Yeah. The Mishnah says Shera Shiyanka Mina Treifa Kivasa Asura. If it nursed from a treif mother, the milk in the stomach of the calf is still treif. It's still considered milk. On the other hand, the Gemara said that if you let me read the part in parentheses, it says, Ksheira Sheyanka Minatrefa is kosher because it's Pirsha B'Yalma. It's a flat out stira. The Mishnah says it stays milk in the calf's stomach. The Gemara says it turns to Pirsha B'Yalma and it's kosher. So it's a flat out stira. So what do you do? Rashi fixes the stira by erasing the line in the Gemara. He says, no, the Gemara never said that. It's just treif. It's just still milk. The Rif fixes, and the Rambam fixes the stira, saying we hold like the Gemara. That line in the Mishnah? That line in the Mishnah was before Chazara when they held different things. And he like tweaks a little what they held before Chazara. So he says, the Mishnah's wrong. It was before Chazara. The Gemara's right. Rashi says, the Mishnah's right. The Gemara doesn't exist. He changes the Girsa. And Rabbeinu Tam is a peacemaker here. Rabbeinu Tam says the Mishnah's right and the Gemara's right. It's milk and it's perish. Must be two different cases. What's the two different cases? And he says something very reasonable. What does he say? Exactly. What happens to milk in the stomach? Rabbeinu Tam actually makes a lot of sense. If I ask the scientist, again, not the scientist's opinion is always relevant halachically. Halachically depends on the halachic status. But if I ask the scientist, he would probably agree with Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, not because of then the Mishnah's right and the Gemara's right, but because what happens to the milk in the stomach? There's a certain enzyme in the stomach called rennet. Enzyme called rennet. And that is the digestive enzyme in the stomach of a calf. And what does it do? It takes the milk and it digests it. What happens to the milk that gets digested? It gets solidified. Karish, right? It takes the liquid milk and digests it and makes it solid. And when it's liquid, it's more like milky. When it's solid, it's more this weird new substance. So, by the way, why is this whole sugya the most important lamaisa sugya in the days, in the old days? Old days being like not just 2,000 years ago, the days of the Mishnah and the days of the Gemara, but until, you know, 100 years ago or something. Because that same enzyme, like, who cares? It's just that, like, people were very poor then, so they needed to, like, eat the milk from inside the calf's stomach? No. Because that enzyme rennet, which Hashem designed originally to digest the milk in the calf's stomach, but Hashem also had in mind that people would get clever someday and realize that that is the enzyme that makes cheese. Remember, you have to put an enzyme to curdle and make it into cheese? The enzyme that was used for thousands of years for cheese making from when they invented cheese making. I don't know who invented cheese making. It doesn't say. You know, it doesn't say if it was Tubal Cain or whoever. But whoever invented, or Yuval or Yavel, or whoever invented cheese making, until really the modern era, how did they make cheese? You have to put an enzyme to curdle the cheese. That enzyme, this is rennet. That same enzyme makes cheese. Now, when it's in the calf's stomach, it turns the milk into this like gross, hard, solid thing and like takes all the nutrients through the walls of the stomach into the bloodstream. When it's done, not in the calf's stomach, in a different environment, it just makes curds and whey, makes delicious cheese. So this is very important because how did they make cheese in the old days? You had to use rennet. Where do you get rennet from? You couldn't like grow more rennet in your lab, right? You got rennet from the stomach of a calf. Either you would cut up the stomach of the calf into little pieces and each piece had some enzyme rennet, or you would take the milk in the stomach of the calf and divide that into different portions, and each of those portions was full of the enzyme and could be used to make cheese. So this is very important. That's what he more talks about. Mamid. Mamid literally means to make something stand, right? That's called making cheese. Mamid is curdling. Why? Because you make the milk stand and become a solid block of cheese, right? That's why it's called mamid. So this is very important halacha l'maaseh in their days because they needed to know what they could use to make cheese and what they couldn't use to make cheese. Okay, we'll come back to the cheese in a moment. Anyway, halacha l'maaseh says Rabbeinu Tam, he says, I have a very simple solution. If you shech the calf and it's still liquid in the stomach because it's only been there for 5 minutes, then it's still good. It's still good milk taka. If you shech the calf, it's been a couple hours, it already solidified in the stomach, then it already got gross and stopped being like milk and started being like some gross substance, and taka did turn into perish. Not as a chalos, like b'mtzias. And therefore, he says very pashut, and he doesn't mean solid liquid like in the freezer, not in the freezer. He means not yet digested, or not yet significantly digested, and already significantly digested. So that's what he says Rabbeinu Tam, that the tzolol is chalav, and the karush is pirsha. Okay, those are the three opinions. They come out of a stira between the Gemara and the Mishnah. Again, Rabbi Nathan says, yeah, the Mishnah Asers with liquid, the Gemara Masters with solid. Rashi says the Mishnah Asers that erased the Gemara. And the Rif says the Gemara Matters, and the Mishnah was from before they changed their mind, was not Lahalacha. Was from old Judaism, and we practice new Judaism. Okay, how do we paskin? Okay, now we have to figure out how we paskin. So let's see how we paskin. Now, there are going to be some other machlokas also, but first let's see how we paskin about this. Right, and remember, our nafkaminas are mostly in the Shulchan Aruch going to be for basar chalav. Is it milchik or is it parif? But it's also a nafkamina if the mother was treif. It's a nafkamina if it's kosher or treif. So if it's still milk, it's still treif. If it becomes parish, it becomes kosher. And even if it becomes parish and disgusting, it's still very useful because it has the enzyme. So, says the Mechaber, test. Cholav ha-nimtza v'keiva, eino cholav. Milk you find in the stomach of a calf is not milk. Umutol vashvol basar afilu b'tzol shabai. You're allowed to cook meat in it, even in the liquid. Okay. So, that's clearly the opinion of the Rif and the Rambam, which makes perfect sense. It should be. The Mechaber. So, he's a big mako. Then he says, V'yesh misha oser, som aser. Okay, first of all, is he passing like the Yesh Misha Oser? What's the general rule that most Achronim assume in the Mechaber? How do we know? Why did I just write he passing like the Rif and the Rambam? Didn't he put two opinions? What's the rule that most Achronim agree in what the Mechaber meant? There's a rule called Stam V'yesh Omrim, Halachik Stam, meaning he didn't say Yesh Omrim V'yesh Omrim. He says it's not milk, it's mutter. And some people say Oser. So when he says it is mutter and some say Oser, the assumption of most, the vast majority of Achronim that he meant, if he says it is mutter, but some say usser, so it's really mutter. Some say usser, but the mainstream opinion is mutter. That's the standard understanding of the Mechaber. There are some Achronim who disagree, but the mainstream understanding is when he says stam and yesh omer, he passes like the stam. So the Mechaber is understood as being mako. Yesh misha oser. That yesh misha oser, which opinion is it? Are we sure which opinion it is?
Depends on how far
he's going
back.
Yeah, if Yesh Misha Oser only in the liquid, like Rabbeinu Tam, or Yesh Misha Oser across the board, like Rashi. It's hard to tell, but the Shachem Taz tell us, right? The parentheses also tell us. The parentheses say Tosos for Rabbeinu Rosh, Rosh for Rabbeinu Tam, Rosh for Rat. Okay, those parentheses were added later. But the Shachem Taz tells us, says the Taz, Yesh Misha Oser perish betzolol davka. Yesh Misha Oser is only on the liquid, says the Shach, Yesh Misha Oser perish betzolol. Okay, clearly the Yesh Omrim in the Mechaber is Rabbi Nutam. Liquid is Osir, but solid is Mutter. It says the Ramah v'chein Nogin. So the Ramah paskins like Rabbi Nutam. Now, who paskins like Rashi in the generation of the Mechaber and the Ramah? Anyone paskin like Rashi from the generation of the Mechaber and the Ramah? That's a little tricky because I'm asking you to know history. Good, the Maharshal. The Shach and Taz both quote from the Maharshal. Who is the Maharshal? Okay, Rav Shlomo Luria. He is, you know, in the back of the Gemara under the Maharshal, there is the Chachma Shlomo, I think is the way it's printed in other things. That's the Maharshal. He actually wrote, the Chachma Shlomo was originally longer than the one printed in the back of the standard Gemaras, because he wrote like a lot of fixing the Gersa and Shas, but then when they printed the modern Shases, they just took all of his corrections and like implemented them. So they just said, you know, like, basically for every Chachma Shlomo, there's no, like, three Chachma Shlomo says this Gersa should be that and this Gersa should be that, but they already changed it, like he said. So they didn't print those things anymore. Yeah, he was the one, like, the Gersa that we have in Shas, the one most responsible for it is the Maharshal. I mean, besides the people who wrote it originally. I mean, but among fixing the little things in the Gersa, the fixing of the Gersa, who's most responsible? Rabbi Ravashi, I mean, they wrote it, right? But I mean, among fixing the Gersa, the Maharshal was most influential, most responsible for fixing the Gersa of Shas. Okay, so the Maharshal was a contemporary of the Ramah. He also wrote some halachas for him. He wrote the Sefer Yam Shel Shlomo, which he got through a number of sechtas of Shas, including Chulin, so that's very relevant for here, where he went through every sugya and lehalacha, just said, what are the shitas and how do we paskin lehalacha? And he was super, he went through every sheet, how to pass the halacha. He also wrote an Isser Heter. Remember I said everyone, he wrote an Isser Heter. Sometimes it says, don't quote, ha-maharshal be'alef vav shin. That doesn't mean maharshal be'er samayach, that means ha-maharshal be'isser v'heter shalom. In his Isser Heter, he wrote a small Isser Heter. He wrote other svarim also. He wrote quite a number of svarim. He was a contemporary of the Ramah. Back in the day, he was considered equally chashiv to the Ramah. obviously in history, the Ramah, since he wrote the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch, became a basic part of Judaism, and the Marshal became something for Talmidei Chacham to learn. But at the time, they were really considered equally chashuv, and that's why the Shachar Taz, when the Marshal says something, it's against the Ramah, they quote it, and it's like two equally valid shitas, right? So the Marshal quoted by the Shachar Taz thinks we should pass him like Rashi. So in that generation, we have three earliest achronim who paskin like all three opinions. Okay, how do we paskin? So here it gets a little tricky, because the Shach in Sivkat and Chaf Hei meanders a little. He says, well, maybe you should still be machmer because of Maris Ayin. Okay, we hold like the Ramah, but maybe just make sure to avoid Maris Ayin, so like don't go because it looks like meat and milk. And then the end it says, and the Marshal is machmer like Rashi. And the Ran also seems that way, which Taka he does. And the Rokeach holds that way, although it's Tzarech Iyun Astira, and the Isra Hetara Aura holds that way.
How's Tama the Rif and I'm getting out of the Maris Ayin of the milk? Does it look different than
the... What would they do with the Maris Ayin of the milk? I think they would have to say that, yeah, it's mutter, but it's only mutter in a way that there's no Maris Ayin. Let's say, I don't know, you put the stomach of the calf next to your pots, so that, like the almonds that people
say.
Well,
it's not soul, man.
If not, so let's say it is salt, but they're right, that's why it represents. So you'd have to put something to show that it's not Maris Ayin.
Is it possible it's a Raya that for Issa Darabana?
No, I think two things are separate. Okay, anyway, the Shach here sort of ends with the Marshal, but it's a little unclear. Like, what's he saying? Is he ending like the Marshal saying we should hold like the Marshal? Is he just ending like the Marshal saying, well, I already paskin like the Ramah, I'm just pointing out an interesting Shita? It's a little unclear. The Shach later on, he cheats a little. In Sivkat and Lamed Beis, he says, and based on what I said in Sivkat and Chaf Hei, now, he didn't say so much Sivkat and Chaf Hei, but I guess he's like adding to what he said in Sivkat and Chaf Hei. Like, if you read, you say, like I said in Sivkat and Chaf Hei, you say, he wasn't so specific in Sivkat and Chaf Hei, but he means based on what I said in Sivkat and Chaf Hei, he understands that in Sivkat and Chaf Hei, he was a little more machmir. And what does he say in the end? In the end, he says the Shach, and this is the Hachra Lamaisa. I don't know if this comes up all the time. This is the Hachra Lamaisa, says the Shach, and we'll pass him like this, Lamaisa, that B'makom She'ein Hefsed Meruba, we're machmer like the Marshal. In the end, we're machmer like neither opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, like the Marshal. There's no Hefsed Meruba, we're machmer like the Marshal. Certainly the Chachiva, even B'di'evit, if it's only a small Hefsed, that treat it all as milchik. B'makom Hefsed Meruba, we're making like the Ramah, but we're never making like the Mechaber. That is the Hachra of the Shach, and that's how we would pass in the Maisa.
There are
Ramah,
Dark Moshe, someone else said,
Hefsed
Meruba, you can make
it. I don't remember that in the Dark Moshe, but maybe. But in any case, we hold like
the Shach.
No, we hold like the Shach. Generally, we hold like the Shach until proven otherwise. The Shach is the most authoritative of the class of Mefarshim, the older Mefarshim HaShulchan
Aruch. When we get this far of Hefsed Meruba or not, because it sounds like really he would really hold more like Rabbi Yehuda than he would have.
Right, the assumption is that, Rav Shechter is his own way of saying this, but the assumption is that when we say we're making Makom Hefsed Meruba, what that means is that in Ikra Din we paskin Lakula. However, because we're not sure, we're Machmer when we can. So it means like Me'ikra did we pass like Rabbeinu Tam, but because this, we're not 100% sure, we try to be Machmer like Rashi. So if there's no Hefsed Meruba, we try to be Machmer. If there's Hefsed Meruba, we go back to the Ikra Din and we are Meikel. That's the assumption. Rav Shechter likes to say it a little differently. That means we totally pass like Rabbeinu Tam, just out of covet for Rashi and the Marshal, we're Machmer if there's no Hefsed Meruba. I don't think most people think that way, but okay, just say it. But anyway, you're right. Meaning if we're making Machmer Hefsed Meruba, we must think that when push comes to shove, that's the halacha. Right, like if someone held a gun to your head and say, tell me which shita the halacha, you're only allowed to say one shita. He would say Rabbeinu Tam. But since I'm nervous, I'll be machmer like Rashi if there's no Hefsed Meruba. Correct. Okay, now another issue comes up. So that's Sif Tes. I don't have anything to add to Sif Tes yet. Now another issue comes up. Now, of course, here it's going to be a little complicated because certain issues are only going to come up according to certain shitas. So, let's take, what is Sif Yud about? Sif Yud is about the following question. Let's assume, let's ask the following question. Let's say you have the tam of basar goes into the chalav shebekeva, right? It absorbs tam of meat. Now, is that a far-out scenario that it'll absorb the tam of meat, or a common scenario? That this milk in the stomach will absorb the tam of basar. Is that a weird scenario or a common scenario?
Does the stomach have a tam of basar?
Yes, it does. Okay. It's a common scenario because it's found in the stomach. If you just leave it in the stomach, it will absorb the tam from the stomach. How can it absorb the tam from the stomach? Either if you cook it in the stomach, or remember what two cold processes are still count as cooking, as absorbing. If you salt it in the stomach, you salt the stomach with the milk inside. Now the milk gets the tam of the stomach. Or kavush. If you sweep paskin kavush, you can soak it for 24 hours. If you soak it for 24 hours, it'll absorb the taste. So this is a common thing. So what happens in this case? So now there are two scenarios. Eric, you're going to have to put on your logical hat. If we're talking about, right, what is status of the chalav in that case? It also has what's the status. The basar. Okay. So here, it depends what case you're talking about. If you're talking about lefi Rashi or solol lefi Rabbi Natan, then it's easy. What's the status of the milk in the keva if it absorbed the taste of meat? Right? How does this happen? One second. Let me just give an example of how this happens. I salt the stomach with meat inside. No, sorry. With the milk inside. That's how the taste of the stomach can go into the milk. Or let it soak for 24 hours. We'll see. We have to slightly modify this. Okay, now what's the status of the milk inside the stomach? According to Rashi, it's very easy. What's the status of the milk inside the stomach?
Milk.
It's milk, and so what's the status after it got the time of basar? It's basar mechalav, it's treif. If it's liquid according to Rabbi Natan, that's easy. Then there's no need for a sugya. It becomes basar mechalav. It's asur. Yeah, because they held it's real milk that you salt with meat or soak with meat, becomes basar mechalav. Where is the machlokes? The machlokes is lefi the rif or karush lefi rabbeinu tam. Meaning, it wasn't considered milk. So it's not considered milk, now it absorbed the taste of meat. So what's its status now? What might you say?
Meat.
It's meat, right? Because it's a par of thing that got taste of meat. So it's fleshik. Or what might you say?
It still has tam. Why is it cheese? Why isn't it cheese?
Because in the environment of the stomach, this enzyme makes it this gross digestive thing.
So
in the environment of cheese making, of the barrel, it makes it into good cheese. It's not the same.
Okay.
It has some similarity, I'm sure, but it's not the same. Okay, here is the famous machlokes Rishonim that the Mordechai brings down. The Mordechai brings down a machlokes Rishonim. Here we have two possibilities. One possibility is that it becomes fleshig. I think that's how it's spelled, fleshig. It becomes fleshig. Why? It's a power of thing that absorbs the time of meat. A power of thing that absorbs the time of meat is fleshig. The other possibility is that it stays parif. Why would it stay parif? Because it's not a power of thing that absorbs the time of meat. Carrots that absorb the time of meat become fleshig. Potatoes that absorb the palm of meat become fleshig. But this is not carrots or potatoes. This is pirsha, excrement. Right? Excrement that absorbs the time of meat shouldn't become fleshig. It's so gross that that time of meat is not is not significant.
Doesn't it not matter? It's before the football that goes into the
bleos. The football has bleos. Okay. The football, let's assume, is a kli. A kli can absorb bleos because it's not gross in and of itself. It's neutral. This is gross. So here is where there was this big misunderstanding between everyone about comparing it to not bar not. What do you mean by not bar not? Let me explain what not bar not means. Not bar not, and also, okay, that one, the football example is like surah, this is a tera. Not bar not means this. Don't pass it yet. But if The time of meat goes into a pot. I cook meatballs in a pot. Time of meat goes into a pot. Now, the time from that pot, now I cook spaghetti in the pot. Time of meat went into the pot went into the spaghetti. It's called nosing time or nosing time. Like giving it a taste, which came from giving it a taste. Like the second transfer. Meatballs gave their taste in the pot. The pot gave the taste in the spaghetti. Spaghetti's parv. Again, don't try this at home. We have certain chumras. I'm talking the ikra din.
Don't we say before that it doesn't matter how many?
That's if something was treif.
There's a treif and just a tam.
Different in treif inflation.
But if it's yes.
Chalav, if I cooked pork or basar b'chalav in a pot, and then I cook spaghetti in that pot, and then I reheat the spaghetti in a second pot, and then I cook vegetable soup in the second pot, and then I reheat this vegetable soup in a third pot, and then I cook potatoes in a third pot, they're all treif. The kulav not barnat is only by a mutter taste, like pure meat or pure milk. Okay, good point. So that's called not barnat de teira. So if I have like meat taste goes into a pot goes into the spaghetti. Again, if we're Ashkenazim, we should have certain chumras like achila, but really that spaghetti's parv. I'll be dim that spaghetti's parv.
Everything that pot you make is parv?
Yes, with certain exceptions, which we'll get to. Except for sharp foods.
Well, if I cook milk in that,
then that's that. That
even
that's usher.
Even though it's an aparnat
teira. No, because an aparnat teisur, because the second step is a tizur, and that's already isser. Okay, so now here's the comparison. Says the Beis Yosef, he thinks you can make a comparison, and some people like taking too literally. Like,
you should never take people too literally. Here we have the taste of meat into the pot, into, it's really fish is always the example. Fish. And then you mix that fish with milk. That's perfectly okay. Fish are parv, you can mix it with milk. Again, without these faradim, not mixing fish with milk. Right? That's okay. Why? Because it's two transfers before it hits the milk. What's the example here? Meat into pirsha, and then you want to know if you can mix the pirsha into milk. So says the Beis Yosef, maybe this is the same thing. You know why? Because...
In which case is this?
What?
Which case was the one that was this? The Beis Yosef mentioned?
The Beis Yosef compares this to this. Just like in this case, which is a double pashut, the meat taste gets so weakened by the time it's in the fish, that it's now power if you can mix the fish with milk. Likewise here, the meat taste gets so weakened by being in the pirsha that now it's parv. And the pirsha is parv. Right? That's what we're basically saying. This fish is parv.
You know, it's one less step.
And this pirsha maybe is parv. So a lot of people misunderstood the Beis Yosef. It says, what do you mean? You can't compare one step to two steps. Or if you're comparing two steps, the second step is already in milk. That's already a trait. No, he didn't mean it's the same thing. He just meant, as the doctor must point out, it's similar. Two steps without pirsha maybe weakens the taste as much as one step with pirsha, because pirsha weakens it more than footballs or pots. Okay, this is the machlokus. Does it stay pariv because the meat taste gets weakened, right? Becomes fleshed because it absorbed tam basar, or does it stay pariv because the tam basar is weakened by being in pirsha? Whatever's in pirsha gets weak and it doesn't count anymore.
So my ikra did that spaghetti that I cooked in the pot of meat. I can now take that spaghetti and put cheese on top.
Yes.
L'chatchila?
Only for Sfardi. Ashkenazim or machber l'chatchila.
Shouldn't have to get it. That would be like fleshing equipment, right?
Right. That's like dairy fleshing equipment. So Ashkenazim or machber l'chatchila. Sfardi don't hold it up. Rovadia says, even though the Shach says Sfardi don't hold this way. But he holds Sfardi. Ravadia says you can mamish take your fleshik pot 10 minutes after cooking meatballs and cook spaghetti in the pot to make spaghetti to eat it with cheese. Okay, if you're Sephardi and follow Ravadia, everything's mutter. Great. Ashrecha v'tovlach. Ashrecha v'olamazeh v'tovlach v'olamaba. Yeah, and don't even say, but you have to get up for all of Elul to say slichos, because Ravadia says, if it's hard, just get up on Monday and Thursday. And he says, it's going to impact your learning. Just get up Monday and Thursday. Okay, Monday and Thursday for Elul's, not so many days. Now, this is basically the question. The question is, why would he think something that absorbed the taste of meat would be parv? The answer is we have precedent. Something that absorbed indirectly the taste of meat is parv, because that taste of meat gets too weak. So maybe something that absorbed directly the taste of meat, but it's a gross thing, is also pirate because the taste of meat is too weak. Okay, hard to tell. L'maisa, this is machlokes in the Mordechai. The Mordechai says it is a machlokes between the Rash Mishantz and the Rav Yon, the Sefer Atruma. The Rash Mishantz, I think, was the Mekel. Yeah? This is, says the Mordechai. He doesn't paskin. The Rash, you know the Rash Mishantz, like the on the side of the Mishnayos and Zerayim and Taros, and sometimes quoted in Tosos, not so often, the Talmud of the Re, versus the Rav Yah, often quoted in the Mordechai, we have the Sefer Rav Yah, and the Sefer Truma. Sefer Truma, by the way, okay, if you've learned in Yeshiva for a number of years, you've probably heard of the Rash Mishantz. And he wrote Parish on the Mishnayos with his No Gemara, which is printed in standard Vilna Shas. If you open up your Vilna Shas to after Brachos or after Nida, you'll see the Rash Mishantz inside of Mishnayos, and he was one of the Bali Tosos. There's Tosos Rash Mishantz on some, I mean, he wrote on all of them, but we have on some Sechtes. Right, we have on, I forget, Ksuba Tosos Shantz. Ksubas we have, oh, Baba Kama, right? Shiva Gnes always quotes Tosos Shantz. That's a Rash Mishantz. Okay. The Rav Yah was one of the great poskim of the Ashkenazic Rishonim. He's quoted all over the Mordechai, who generally collects Ashkenaz, you know, the main Ashkenazic poskim, sometimes in the Rush, and we have the Sefer Rav Yah, and Halach L'maisa, the Rav Yah is very chashuv. Sefer HaTruma, the Avi Ezri. They also call it the Avi Ezri. Yes. The Rav Yah is also called the Avi Ezri. The Rav Yah is just the name of the person, the Avi Ezri is the name of the book. He's also called the Avi Asaf. There's a lot of names for that book. I'm not sure why. The Sefer HaTruma is a very important book that you don't see that much in Shas. But sometimes, rarely, Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Baruch. Rabbeinu Baruch Migermaiza, which in English is Rabbeinu Baruch of Worms. He was one of the biggest Talmidim of the Ri in Tosfos. And he's quoted in Tosfos, but rarely. I mean, he wrote a book called Sefer HaTruma, which goes through a lot of the halachas of Shabbos and of Kashrus and some other things. And he's considered a very, very important source for halacha in Yoredeah. So the Rash Mishantz is not quoted so often because he didn't write halacha books, but the Rav Yah wrote a halacha book. You know, the minhag of the German Rishonim, as opposed to the French Rishonim. The French Rishonim all wrote Tosfos, and mostly only Tosfos. The German Rishonim all wrote halacha books. Like, for example, the Rosh and the Mordechai and back of the Gemara are halacha books in order of the Gemara. And the Sefer HaTruma wrote a halacha book not in order of the Gemara. And the Rav Yah wrote a halacha book in order of the Gemara. Like, the Rav Yah could have been the Mordechai. Like, similar style. Anyway, okay, so the Sefer HaTruma is Machber. Okay, and there are Beis Yosef and Vayik other shitas. How do we paskin? So let's see. First, I'm going to read just the Machaber. Chol of Hanim Tzubakeva Sifyod, if you find milk in the Keva, and remember, this is according to the Rif. This is the Machaber talking. Right? So, pyre of milk you find in the Keva. Skipping the parentheses. Shenimlach the Kevasa. If you salted it in the stomach, and it got the tam of meat from the stomach. Osha omgo yom echad, or it sat there for 24 hours, which is called silky, which is called kavush, and got the tam of the stomach. Aser lahamid bo. You're not allowed, what do you mean lahamid bo? He doesn't say you're not allowed to eat it, because, well, or that it's flake sugar that you're not going to eat it anyway, it's gross. Ataka is gross. And you're not going to put it as an ingredient in your food anyway, it's gross. But what are you going to do with it? You can use it as an enzyme, lahamid bo. An enzyme, it doesn't matter if it's gross and doesn't taste good. Because an enzyme, you only need one drop in a big barrel, and that's enough because they, like, replicate themselves somehow. I don't understand exactly how enzymes work, but they're very cool. So he says that if it gets a tam of meat, you can't use it anymore for cheese making. Meaning, he considers, if he says you can't use it for cheese making, then he considers it to be fleishig or parv? Fleishig. That's why he says you can't use it for cheese making. But, interestingly, is a diak. He says you can't use it for cheese making. What could he have said that's stronger that he didn't say? That if you did use it for cheese making, it would chafe up your cheese. He says you can't use it for cheese making. Now, it's a diak, not clear, but adds the, if you look at the Beis Yosef is very clear what he means. I wouldn't make a diak from the Shulchan Aruch, but if you look at the Beis Yosef, it is very clear, says the Beis Yosef, and the Machaber matches the Beis Yosef again. From the Machaber, we know he says, lechatchila, don't use it for cheese making. We're not sure what he thinks, but he has it. And I wouldn't make a diak. But in the Beis Yosef, he's very clear. What he thinks is that, lechatchila, you should treat it as fleishik, and bidi yeved, you can treat it as parv. And that's not only the opinion of Beis Yosef, that's also the opinion of the Ramah, says the Ramah. V'im hemid bo, and if you did use it for cheese making, imu tzolo osu kalik vinos, if it's liquid, he holds liquid, is milchik. So of course, if you mix meat into milchik, then it answers all the cheese. Ad sheyehei shisha b'cholav shehemid neged kev asur, unless the milk that you made into cheese was 60 times this asur, keva, this by keva here means milk in the stomach. V'im haya shisha b'cholav chol mater, but if it was bottled, shisha is all mater. V'im haya keva krusha, what if it was solidified, which is pyrid, and then it absorbed time of meat and then used it for cheese making. Eino seres kloma filo haya shisha b'cholav neged keva. By keva here, he means not the stomach, he means the milk in the stomach. It doesn't answer anything, even if it wasn't batul b'shisha. Okay, stop. Says the Ramah, the same thing as the Beis Yosef. The same thing the Beis Yosef says, by all milk in the stomach, the Ramah says, and again, by keva here, he doesn't mean the stomach, he means the milk inside. The Ramah says about the solid milk in the stomach, right? Which he thinks is parif, right? So the Mechaber thinks all milk in the stomach is parif, is pirsha. The Ramah thinks solid milk is pirsha. They both say the same thing. Beis Yosef is clear and the Ramah is clear. Lechatchila, if an absorbed time of meat, treated as fleishik. Because bichoshish for the Rav Yal to say for a truma, lechatchila treated as fleishik. But b'di'eved, you could treat it as pyriv. What does that mean? Lechatchila, if you soaked it or salted it in the stomach and absorbed time of basar, consider it fleishik and don't use it for cheese making. What are you going to do with it if you don't use it for cheese making? Throw it in the garbage. There's nothing else you can do with it. It's not good for anything else. It's kosher fleishik, but it's not good for anything else. But b'di'eved, if you did use it for cheese making, even though it had the time of meat, we assume the time of meat got so weak that it doesn't count anymore, and it was pyrith, and the cheese is kosher, even if it was more than a 60th of the cheese. If it's less than a 60th of the cheese, then it's batal regardless. But even if it was more than a 60th of the cheese, that is the halacha l'maisa according to the Ramah. Now, of course, according to Marshal, none of this is going to help us. This is only according to the Ramah. Because according to the Maharshal, then it was milchik. And if you then salted or soaked it in the stomach, it becomes bas v'cholav and treif and you're in big trouble. But this is according to the Ramah. Now, the so let's just review. What happens if it becomes bas v'cholav, if you make cheese with it, the cheese is usher unless it was buffled b'shisha, right? Unless the keva you put in was less than a 60th of the barrel. In this case, how do we paskin? Don't make cheese with it. L'chatchila. If you did, then it's mutter. Okay, that's how we're machri, and this machlokas brought down by the Mordechai. Now we have one more machlokas. There's also a lot of details here, but I might skip some of the details. And if you have questions, you can ask me privately. Because like Kedaka Makotas, they bring in all the other simanim here. There's one more machlokas. What's the one more machlokas? Which only applies according to the shita of Rabbi Yutam / Ramah. Which is this. Let's say you shecht a calf. In its stomach is milk that's in the middle of being digested. Maybe it's liquid because it's only a little digested, or maybe it's already solidified because it's a lot digested. When you slaughter the calf, it doesn't stop the digestion. Just because the calf's dead, the enzymes are still working. The enzymes are still alive. And technically, they're not alive, but they're still working. I'm pretty sure enzymes are not living beings. But they're amazing machines. You can do anything with enzymes. That's what Schechter told me once. right. He says, yeah, if they're the right enzyme, you just take, like, creative oranges, you drop the right enzyme, and it becomes peanut butter. That's an exaggeration. But only a small one. So here's an interesting question. Only lefi this shita, that there's a difference in solid and liquid, what happens if you shech the calf and you find liquid milk in the stomach? So it has the status of milchik. And then you let it sit for a while and the enzymes keep working and it turns solid. So when originally it was milk and then it turned solid, Does it now turn into Pirsha? Or no, once it was milk, it's too late. It keeps its status. So what if it solidifies post-mortem? Right? After you shecht the calf. Does it turn parav or does it stay milchik? Okay, on the one hand, when you shechted the calf, you cut it open, it was milchik because it was liquid, so it stays milchik. On the other hand, no. It kept digesting after death. And if it keeps digesting, it turns into pirsha. The halachic question is, does the process of digestion count after the calf is dead? If it still counts the process of digestion, then it turns into pirsha. If once the calf is dead, you can't talk about equal digestion anymore, then it didn't turn into pirsha. Okay, that's a formal question. It's not a I don't think it's a practical question. I think it's a formal question, although I'm not a scientist. So here's the last machlokes we showed them. What about solo ulvasof nikrash? Meaning it was liquid bishashkita. When you shechted the calf, you cut it open, there was a liquid milk. And then achar shvita. Then you got distracted, you came back 2 hours later, and all of a sudden you see it turn solid. Does it stay milchik, or did it turn parif? Okay, could be a big nafgamina for all these other shaylos. So, here is a machlokas rishonim. It's not bar machlokas rishonim. The shach points out that the rashba shita here is a diuk, and therefore he is a little skeptical of it. But Beis Yosef presents it as a machlokas rishonim between the Mordechai and the rashba. Says the Mordechai. Hope I have it right. Oh, it's in the parentheses here. So, no, I just hope I have it right. Which is which? Yes, I do. The Mordechai's maker, correct. Says the Mordechai, it is Parav. It turns into Pirsha. Meaning, it can become Pirsha post-mortem. How digestion of a dead animal is considered digestion in Halacha. And it turns into Pirsha. Says the Rashba, although he didn't say, but he also understands the Rashba. I thought it was a good deal for the Rashba. The Shach here in Sukkot Lamed B's question for a bit. Says the Rashba, and this is not the Rashba Shach. It's one thing not to be confused about. When the Mordechai quotes the Rashba, he doesn't mean what we call the Rashba. The Mordechai never met the Rashba. I mean, never saw the writings of the Rashba. The Mordechai quotes the Rashba, he means the Rashba Shach, because the Rashba Shach is also a Rashba. When Tosfos quotes Rashba, he doesn't mean what we call the Rashba, like that blue book that we have in Bava Kamma. When Tosfos quotes the Rashba, when the Mordechai quotes the Rashba, he means the Rashmi Shantz, who was Rav Shimshon ben Avraham of Shantz, one of the Bali Tosfos from France. Nothing to do with our Rashba in the blue book on Bava Kamma, which is Rav Shlomo ben Aderes from Spain. Right? They lived in different times and different places. The Rashba Shantz lived in the beginning of the 1200s, and the Rashba lived at the end of the 1200s and the beginning of the 1300s. So almost 100 years between them, and France and Spain was very far away politically. Very different, and learning-wise, Derech HaLimud-wise, says this Rashba means our Rashba, the Sephardi Rashba. The Sephardi Rashba is super important in Yoredeah. Why is the Sephardi Rashba super important in Yoredeah? You might think, well, he's a Talmud of the Ramban, and the Rebbe, the Ritva, and Talmud of Rabbeinu Yonah, and etc., and a friend of the Ra'ah, so they should all be equally important. Not true. Why is the Rashba more important? Because he wrote the Torah Sabayis, right? You really can't throw a stone in Hilchas Kashrus or Nida without hitting the Torah Sabayis. He wrote the Torah Sabayis, which is like a proto-Yoredeah. It goes through all the halachas of Kashrus and Nida also, and it was considered one of the most important halachic works of the Rishonim, certainly from Sfard. You know, after the Rif and the Rambam, the most important halachic work is probably the Torah Sabayis. So, the Rashba, and remember the Yosef here points out that the Chedusha Rashba on one part sounds a little different from Torah Sabayis. Well, generally follow Torah Sabayis. From the Rashba, he's medayik that it is still milk. It's still considered milk. Even if it digests after death, that doesn't count halachically digesting, it stays milking. Okay, how do we paskin? And who's we? According to the Mechaber, it's a non-issue. Liquid and solid are both parav. So who cares if the liquid became solid? It's parav. According to the Marshal, and the way we paskin normally based on the Shach in a normal case, we pass like Rashi. Who cares? Either way, it's still melchik. But according to the Ramah, or us, if there's Hefzin Merubah, then we care. right? If it started out solid and then liquid and then turned solid, what's its halachic status? Because this could actually happen in the old days, right? What happened in the old days? Someone shechted a calf, found liquid milk inside, let it sit, it became solid. And then they accidentally salted it together with the stomach lining, so it got the time of meat, and then they used it to make cheese. So we want to know, was it still milk that got the time of meat and treif, or was it, okay, so we want to know what's the status of that cheese. So, says the Ramah, V'imhaya kevat solol me'ikara v'nikrash, what if it was originally liquid and then got solidified? Yesh lo din solol, it counts as liquid, it's still milchik. Kesh yosef v'shem harash, but v'shem haposkim. V'yesh v'kilim azeh, shindalit shari dura. Okay, we'll introduce shari dura next time. U'beis yosef v'shem ha-mordechai. Okay, says the Ramah, two opinions. Right, two opinions. It's considered milchik v'yesh v'kilim azeh. And what's his achra? Uvemakom hefsid yesh lahakel. You can be makel if there is a hefsid. Says the shach. What kind of hefsid does he mean? Hefsid merupa. There's a big hefsid. Often when the Ramah says hefsid, the achronim say he means only a big hefsid, hefsid merupa. Not always. It's a little ambiguous. But usually, when someone says hefsid, they mean hefsid merupa. Because a small hefsid is not a real hefsid. So, says the Ramah, what's the psak? The psak is, according to the Ramah, says the Ramah, that if there's no hefsid meruba, we treat it as chalav. If there's a hefsid meruba, we treat it as parif. And the shach agrees. Shach says, if the shach says different, shach, if there's no hefsid meruba, who cares? Because we treat both liquid and solid as milchik. If there is a hefsid merubah, then we'll treat solid as milchik, and we'll treat this kind of, and parav, we'll treat this kind of parav as solid also. So this is that we paskin. We paskin like this Ramah, that, not exactly for his reason. We paskin there's no hefsid merubah, then even if it's stained liquid, we'll treat it as milchik. And if there is hefsid merubah, we'll treat the karish as milk, as parav, even if it was talal of sulf nekrush, we'll treat it as parav. So we paskin like that Ramah. Okay, that's the basic rules of. That's the basic rules of the status of this keva, right? That first you have to figure out the basic machlokas. What is the status of when you find it? And then you have to, there's two other important machlokas. Number one, if it's parav, what if it gets the taste of meat? Does it stay parav? And number two, according to the Rebbe Tam, what happens if it starts solid and then become starts liquid and then solidifies? What is its status? And we paskin those shilas. Great. We just skipped, we didn't do the end of the Ramah, we also skipped the beginning of the Ramah. The beginning of the Ramah has one other chumrah. Says the Mechaber, let's go back to Yud. The Ramah sort of interpolated something into the Mechaber here, right? Cholav ha-nimtza v'keva. He didn't mean you can't read the Mechaber straight. Of course you can read the Mechaber straight, but then he wanted to add something in. So cholav ha-nimtza v'keva, what did he add in? L'chatchila ein l'hanicho v'keva ad she'itstanin ha-cholav v'socha keva. L'chatchila, you shouldn't let the milk sit in the stomach, just to let it cool down. You shouldn't even let it stay for 20 minutes to cool down. Avol b'diavad ein lachvash, but b'diavad it's no problem. Ad she, unless it was nimach v'gasol shom v'yoshalim, if it was salted or sat or soaked for 24 hours, v'az asol ham, but then it becomes fleshed. What did the Rambam mean by this? He means, let's say you shech the calf, right? You shech the calf. When is that milk going to absorb the time from the stomach? Right? Lichatchila, remove milk right away. Why? Because maybe, not really, just maybe lichatchila, maybe the absorption, or maybe it will absorb tam basar quickly. Maybe it'll absorb tam basar in only 10 minutes. So l'chachila, remove it right away. Don't even let it cool down. Remove it while it's still warm. Okay. But
if you left it inside, then there's really no blia, absorption, unless you do melicha or kvisha liyom shalim, right? Which is 24 hours. So really, the ikra did, what causes the transfer of taste? We know cooking does. Or there are two things that are cooking. Meliach krotef and kavish kamavoshal. Salting is like cooking, and soaking, which we interpret to mean soaking for 24 hours, is like cooking. But lechachila, we're afraid it might get that taste of meat into it, even if you let it just sit for 10 minutes. Therefore, you should cut open the stomach and remove the milk right away, if you want it to stay parv, or milchik. Why? Why are we choshish for that lechachila? So we'll see when we get siman kof hey. There are some opinions that say that if you have something sharp with a sharp taste, and it soaks even for a few minutes, will cause a blia, a transfer of taste. There is an opinion, maybe a mechaber taka, that something with a sharp taste, let's say vinegar. Let's say you, I'm not sure why you would do this, you soak a hot dog in vinegar. So the mechaber says that vinegar will become fleishik in just 10 minutes. Because since it has a sharp taste, it causes the taste to transfer very quickly. So, says the chef, explaining here, he says, well, the taste of this milk inside the stomach is very sharp because of all these enzymes. And therefore, since it's sharp, we worry lechatchila, it's not vinegar, it's a little sharp. We lechatchila, we say, don't even let it soak for 10 minutes, because maybe soaking for 10 minutes and it's a little sharp will cause the tam to transfer, will cause it to absorb the taste of the stomach. But that's only like, if you remember. If you let it sit for 10 minutes, or you let it sit for an hour, or 2 hours, or 23 hours and 59 minutes, then it really didn't absorb the taste of the stomach. It's not a problem. It didn't absorb the taste of the stomach. It's really not a problem, unless you salt it or soak it for 24 hours. That's what the Ramah is adding. And the extra chumrah the Ramah is adding here, l'chachila l'mahadrin, to yotzei all the shitas. As soon as you shech the calf, cut open the stomach, and remove this keva, now you have good rennet to use for your cheese-making business. Don't even let it sit for 10 minutes, because it might absorb since it's sharp. But if you did let it sit for 10 minutes, it's fine, as long as it's less than 24 hours and you didn't salt it. Okay, those are the main issues in Sif Yod, except for the last sentence. There's also the discussion, the shachs of Kut Lamed, which we'll come back to soon. And there's also discussion of the Taz in Sifkat and Yud, which I'm not going to deal with right now. The Shach Sifkat and Yud just asks a technical question. He says, we have a rule that when you salt things, it only makes the taste of one thing go into the other thing, to they klipa, a thin layer. So if you salt this keva in the milk in the stomach, it should only make the taste of meat go into a thin layer, not the whole thing. Marzaro think went into the whole thing. Okay, the Taz and the Kuzik doesn't give answers. We're going to skip that for now because we'll come back to all these concepts in Simon Tzadi Aleph and Simon Kofhei and et cetera, et cetera. Let's see what we're going to do now. Let's go to the end of Sif Yod. End of Sif Yod is the most halachah l'maisa, maybe of like anything in the Simon. I may not have anything to say. It's very halacha l'maisa. Not because of the case they had. What was the case they had? Let's review for a second. Anyone want to get the board? Who's in charge of the board? Sally. You didn't get this board yet, I don't think. Let's just review basic halacha l'maisa of cheese making. Again, not nowadays. Nowadays, I'm fairly certain that they still use rennet for cheese making, right? For standard cheese making, use the exact same enzyme rennet. But nowadays, they synthetically produce the enzyme. They don't take it from the calf, from the stomach of a calf. Everything's artificial nowadays.
Vegetable rennet?
What?
They use vegetable rennet.
They use, I don't know if it's from vegetables, but from something. I don't know what they make it out of.
So most cheese nowadays are not trace, I guess.
Okay. We're not getting into this now.
I think it's winter.
But it depends what you mean by not treif. The Gemara says, okay, there are
two very big machlokas, which hopefully we'll talk to at the end of the year, which are about the nature of the halachic zera. Chazal goes around chalav akum, and then goes around gvinas akum. Why they goes around goyish milk, and not getting chasidus. And chasidus, there's all kinds of very, very deep reason why there goes around the klipas. I'm talking in terms of halacha, which is one of the reasons why chasidish poskim and litvish poskim poskim very differently about shilas of chalav akum. So the litvish poskim worry about the halacha, and the halacha is pretty maple. And the chasidish poskim are worried about the klipas, and the klipas are very dangerous. What do you want, a nurse milk from the Sitra Achra? That's why you'll never convince a Hasidic posting to have any Ramosha Feinstein kulas on Chalav Akum. Because, milk is your nursing, is your basic nutrition. It's like, who wants the nurse, right, from the Sitra Achra, from the Klipas? Now, back to Halacha. There's the same Hakira in two places. Chalav Akum, is it what's called Dar Sheba Minyan? A duly legislated prohibition, is Chalav Akum an objective isser? It is usher to drink goyish milk? Or no, Chazal just said, you can't drink goyish milk when there's a chance that it might be treif. Okay, famous machlokes achronim. Is it an objective isser or just a chshash? You have to worry, it might be treif. The simple pshat is that it's just a chshash, you have to worry, it might be treif. And therefore, if you know it's not treif in your country, it's okay. Okay, I'm not possibly just telling you simple pshat. In general, you want to check what's simple pshat. You look in the Chazon Ish, right? He always passes simple pshat in Gemara. Gvinas akum. Is it an objective iser called goyish cheese? Or is it no, only if it might be treif, then they were gozer. So the simple pshat in the Gemara is that there's an objective iser on goyish cheese regardless. Yeah. They originally were worried it might be treif. Then they made an objective isser on goyish cheese. How do I know the simple pshat of the Gemara? Because the Gemara has a story that after they made this gzeira on goyish cheese, someone asked, what were they worried about? What's the problem with goyish cheese? And they refused to tell. Said, it's just a gzeira. Don't ask for the reason why. That makes it sound like it's an objective gzeira. Eventually, they let people in on the reason, but by the time they decided to let people in on the reason, people forgot what the reason was. And there are six pshat in the Gemara. We're not sure which is true. Okay, so, although I'll say the one that most people hold from. So that's why the Pashup Shad in the Gemara, that Chalav Akum is not an objective isser. It's just something that you have to make sure that it's not a chashash of treif. While the Pashup Shad in the Gemara is Gvinas Akum is objective isser. Now, I know there is, we'll get to it. There are the Chachamim of Narbon, the Bali Tosos quote, they were Makel and Gvinas Akum near days because they didn't use any treif ingredients and they held it was not an objective isser. That's a Das Yachid. And I know that people heard from the Rav that in the old days he was making also on cheese in America because there was no chashash of Isser. But, if your last name is Soloveitchik, sometimes you have weird shittas. But that's not Pashup Pshat. Doesn't make a Pashup Pshat. And everyone has a different idea what the Rav held anyway. But a friend of mine asked his nephew, and who remembers going to his house and having the Kraft cheese. But that's not Pashup Pshat. Pretend I didn't say that because I'm going to go Pashup Pshat is an objective isser. We'll get to why in a moment. Now, let's see how you make cheese. You need rennet. Nowadays, all the rennet is synthetic. I don't know what it's made from. I have no idea what the rennet is made from nowadays. I don't know if it's made from vegetables. I don't know if it's made from petroleum.
Of these Gvinas Akum shells.
So nowadays, the Gvinas Akum don't really have treif ingredients. But it's still treif because we hold there's an objective isser called Gvinas Akum regardless. Right? It's like a gzeira. Gzeira applies even if the reason doesn't apply. Okay, we hold Gvinas Akum as objective isser. 99.9% of all poskim Rishonim and Achronim hold that. That's an objective isser. So that's why we still don't need Gvinas Akum. Right? In America, even non-Chol of Yisrael has to be Gvinas Yisrael. Right? You can get Gvinas Yisrael, that's not Chol of Yisrael. Because Rav Moshe has something fancy to say.
You can get Gvinas.
There's Chol of Yisrael cheese and there's non-Chol of Yisrael cheese, but the non-Chol of Yisrael cheese is still Gvinas Yisrael. What do I mean by that? A Jew didn't supervise the milking, but a Jew did the cheese making. Like, he bought milk from a Goyish farm, but then the cheese company had Jews working there. That's called Gvinas Yisrael. Gvinas Yisrael doesn't matter where the milk came from, it matters who made the cheese. Right? Literally, Gvinas Yisrael could also be a verb. The Jew was Megabi. Okay, so how do you get your rennet in the old days? So, there are two choices. How did the Goyim do it? Remember, didn't I tell you there are six pshat in the Gemara why they answered Gvinas Akum? Besides the fact that halakha l'maisa we don't care. Because halakha l'maisa we assume Venus Akhman is objective Xera, and it doesn't matter why they ushered it. Once they ushered it, they ushered it. Whatever Chazal said becomes the law. Right? Becomes Raton Hashem. But why did they ushered Venus Akhman? So one of the theory is Mipnei Shema Midim Be'or Kevas Nevela. Mamidim Be'or Kevas Nevela. They would use, what does it mean, or keva? Or with an ayin. The skin of the stomach. That means the actual stomach lining, not the milk inside. Because if you just say keva, we don't know if you mean the stomach meat or the stuff inside the stomach. So when they use the word or keva with an ayin, that means the actual lining of the stomach. They would use meat of nevela. They would use meat to make their cheese. That's obviously usser. Obviously you can't use meat rennet to make cheese because you're mixing meat and milk. Only goyim would do that. Right? So, how do you make, where do you get your rennet? To take your rennet from the or keva is obviously usser because the or keva is meat. It's the stomach lining. Obviously you can't put meat and milk to make cheese. Goyim would do that. Either they would chop up the keva into pieces and then put a piece in each batch of cheese, or the goyim would do sometimes, they would just keep the stomach intact. You know, the stomach has like an open, two openings, and then it's a sack. And the way they'd make cheese is they would just have a lot of stomachs. They would fill a stomach with milk, tie both ends, and let it sit till it became cheese. Okay, that's obviously usher for us. And if you do it, then the cheese will be treif, because it'll be a combination of meat and milk. We'll get to the numbers in Sefirah Aleph. What's the Jewish way to do it? Is to use the chalav sheva keva, right? Or it's something called the keva. We use the milk in the stomach for cheese making because we had a big machlok and we showed them what the status of the milk in the stomach was. But the two choices were either milk or pyre. Either way, right? You can use it for cheese making, right? Either way, you can use it for cheese making, right? That's how Jews made cheese. They never used the stomach of the animal. The stomach of the animal, they put in the cholent with the meat. They used the milk. First, they washed off the stomach to get off any leftover milk, and they put in the cholent with the meat. They used the milk in the stomach, which is either milk or pyre, depending who you ask. But it's definitely what they used for cheese making. And when does it become controversial? What becomes controversial is the in-between case, which is what we just discussed, is what about cholav shenimlach o nichbash bekevasa. Milk that was salted or soaked for 24 hours inside the stomach, that is a big machlokes in Sif Yud. That's the big machlokes in Sif Yud. Is it pariv? Is it milchik? If it is pariv, when it got the taste of meat, does it stay pariv? Does it become fleishik? That's the big machlokes in Sif Yud. And what would the shitas be? That Rashi would definitely say usser. Rav Tam would say itzol usser. And Rabbeinu Tam bekarush, or the Rif and the Rambam would then get into a machlokes, which we mentioned, which was according to the Rash Mutter and according to the Rav Yah and the Sefer HaTruma Aser. Okay, that's what we already have on the board. Fine. Now, yes?
Is there enough milk to just use the milk that's in the stomach to make cheese? Would they add other milk? Would they use the...
No, sorry, that was just the enzyme. That wasn't the milk. They would have that of regular milk, and they would use a little bit of this for the enzyme. Maybe more than a drop. They'd need more than a drop, because it's not like a concentrated enzyme from a chemical factory. They would use a handful of something. Right, no, that wasn't the milk they made the cheese out of, usually. They made the cheese out of regular milk. This was just the enzyme. So, for example, you shechted a calf, you would take out all the stuff in its stomach, you would say, this looks like 12 portions worth, put it in 12 different jars. And then, every time you want to make cheese, you would take, you know, the size of this room full of milk, put in one of those handfuls, and it would turn it into cheese. That's the magic of enzymes.
I don't understand why Orkeva, if you don't take any of the meat from the actual stomach, could be awesome.
Orkeva is the meat from the stomach.
But it's not in the cheese, you're just using it to make the cheese.
Yes, but you soak it in the cheese for 24 hours. So then the tau goes into the cheese. And even if you... What? Soaking in the milk for 24 hours to make cheese.
But that's not... I think you're soaking it in the enzyme, which is then gone.
No, he's talking about this case.
So that case is the actual cheese itself.
You take a piece of meat and you put it in a vat of milk to make it into cheese. The time of that meat goes into the cheese, and that's a problem.
That means that in the stomach of a gadif, for example, it's not there for 24 hours.
You'd have to say that. I'm sure it's not, actually.
Right, you're saying you'd have to say that.
I'm sure it's not. I mean, everyone knows, if you drink milk, if you ever have a baby, when the baby nurses, it doesn't stay in the stomach for 24 hours. The baby's hungry after much less than 24 hours. Yeah, without getting into other inyanim. You know, maybe there are other technical factors as to what counts as time and what doesn't. But pashut, nothing stays in. Nothing. It could be if you eat something really hard to digest. You know, some people claim the matzah stays for 24 hours. I don't know. I think they're exaggerating. But when a baby drinks milk, it stays for much less than 24 hours. It has an empty stomach and is crying in a few hours. How you do it to those of us who have babies? Now, here's the question. Says the Rama, Or hakeva, lif'amim molchin oso miyabshin oso. The or keva, which Jews should never use for cheese making. And goyim do use for cheese making, that's why their cheese is treif, and that's maybe why, one of the six possibilities, but the most popular among the shonim, why Chazal made an objectivist on all cheese of a goy. Sometimes you salt it. Umiyabshin oso. You don't salt it a little, meaning just like when you salt meat, like in the kosher butcher. No, you salt it a ton, and you dry it out. V'nasa ka'eitz, and it becomes hard as wood. Sometimes you, what's the word for this? For making something hard as wood? Taking out all the moisture? Okay. I'm losing, the longer I stay here, the more English words I forget. Okay, dehydrate. Sometimes you dehydrate it and turn it into hard as wood. Then what do? It's hard as wood, but it still has a little enzyme. And then what they would do is they would dry it till it was hard as wood, and then fill it with milk, and stuff up, plug up the two sides, and fill it with milk, and make it into cheese. So now they're mixing meat with milk to make cheese. But it's not regular meat. It's dried out, inedible, hard meat. So that's the question. Dried out, inedible, hard meat. If you mix with milk, is that a problem? The answer is mutter. Because once it dried out, it still has enzymes, but we don't care about enzymes. We care whether it's flesh. Once it dries out, it becomes like wood. It has no moisture, no taste of meat left. It becomes pyrif. Dried out meat becomes pyrif. It's not called meat anymore. And therefore, if you mix it with milk, it's okay. Now, we don't say to do this lechachila. The shach said it's still also lechachila. Okay, this weird tshuva, the Pesach tshuva quotes of like being makel in some weird case, but generally we assume it's still also chachila. But at the very least, b'dieved, it's not considered meat anymore. Okay, yes.
How is this different than beef jerky?
Because this is much more than beef jerky.
Okay.
Beef jerky, you can still eat,
right.
Can't you?
Yeah.
It's not hard as wood. It's like getting there, but no, this is much more than, it's just quantitatively more dehydrated than beef jerky.
Mm-hmm.
Because beef jerky you plan to eat. So here, you never plan to eat this. What do you plan to do? Just it'll still have some enzymes, so you plan to keep it around for cheese making. But no one's ever going to eat this. Right? No one ever plans to eat it. Okay. Now, what do we learn from here? We learn from here that meat that becomes dry and inedible is not called meat anymore. So meat that becomes dry and inedible is not called meat anymore. That is a big kula. Well, that means, let's say you take treif meat, and you make it dry and inedible. Then it's not treif anymore. It's just wood. Now, what's an afkamina for us? Because if the treif meat becomes dry and inedible, then we're not going to eat it anyway, so who cares?
Shampoo.
What?
Shampoo. It has an ingredient.
But why would they use...
The
No one's going to use dry and edible meat as an ingredient. That's not part of any recipe, right? So I guess I have some weird case, but it's not just a weird case. This affects the big machlok, because nowadays about gelatin.
Capsules.
What is gelatin? Or regular gelatin first. Right. What is gelatin? Gelatin is an ingredient, right? Like Jell-O? It's called Jell-O because it's made of gelatin. What does gelatin do? Jell-O is a good example. It makes things sort of like gummy-ish, right? So gelatin, it was used not as much nowadays. In the old days, in yogurts, to make them a little thicker consistency. Gelatin is necessary for, you know, gummy candies? People still eat gummy candies? Gummy candies need gelatin because that's what makes them gummy like that. In the old days, ice cream, they used to make it like more solid with gelatin. That's why, what do the Italians call ice cream?
Gelato.
Gelato, right, from gelatin. Nowadays, I don't think they use gelatin even in trade ice cream anymore. They have a different way of making it. Our ice cream recipes are different. But it's still called gelato in Italian. What else do they use gelatin for? Marshmallows, right? You can't have marshmallows without gelatin, right? That's what gelatin does. It gives it that sort of, I don't know how to describe it, but that consistency. It thickens the consistency in a certain way. Makes Jell-O, gummy candies, marshmallows, once upon a time ice cream, once upon a time yogurts, things like that. What is gelatin made of? It's a certain chemical. You can have like vegetarian things similar to gelatin, but they don't work so well. Like you can't make marshmallows out of them, and you can't make gummy candies out of them. So gelatin has to come from an animal, and you take like the skin or bones or something of an animal, and you process them with acid to remove like all the like taste and everything, and it just becomes this like powdery, dry, tasteless substance, but it has like those good kind of glue molecules that can then give something consistency, right? And you put a little gelatin in something to give it consistency. So the question is gelatin kosher or treif? Now, let's say you make gelatin from treif animals, right? The standard gelatin factories are treif animals, right? So is it kosher or treif? They have sometimes, the marshmallows, the Mahadran marshmallows in Israel, sometimes use fish gelatin. Because fish gelatin is like all kosher, because I think like the factories coincidentally use kosher fish or something. But still,
I think a candy also has fish
gelatin. A lot of candy also uses fish gelatin. Still, a lot of things are not made with fish gelatin because it's not the same quality as animal gelatin. It's not the same quality as animal gelatin. And animal gelatin, one time used to be made of cow bones, now it's made of pig skins.
If you would chef the kosher animal and use the gelatin.
Okay, give me a second.
Would that be flaccid?
So give me a second. Okay, so first let's examine the question of, now we don't have time, we don't have any time really, because it's very late. But what is the status of meat that, now what's unique about gelatin? It's not exactly the case of this, it's not exactly like this case of the Ramah. Because in the Ramah's case, it never became edible again, right? You never actually eat it. What happened? You dried out the stomach and then put your milk in it. You never actually eat the stomach. The stomach stays inedible forever. The gelatin's a little different. It becomes edible again. You end up eating it. It becomes an ingredient in food. So what happens, the main question, you have meat, you make it inedible and dry and acid and whatever, and then you make it edible again. Does it become fleishik treif again? Or does it stay neutral, kosher parif, like meaning nothingness, right? It's a non-food, right? If I put a non-food ingredient in my food, it's kosher parif. So that's the real question. And this is a fundamental machlokes in the Prima Gadim, Sifkatan Chaf Aleph. Prima Gadim, Sifkatan Chaf Aleph. The main oser here is that Piskei Tshuva got Chaf Aleph, the Prima Gadim, although the Chasam Sofer also osers. Here we have three opinions. The Prima Gadim actually osers for two reasons. Number one, he says this heter was only for a stomach, not for real meat. Although here they don't make it out of real meat either. You know what? Forget that. Prima Gadim is one chomer. He says you're only make it when you start with inferior things like a stomach, not with a good piece of meat. But gelatin also, they don't start with a good piece of meat. They start with skin or bones or something. So that wouldn't bother us. I mean, no one makes gelatin out of a good piece of meat. So that chiddush of the Prima Gadim doesn't bother us. The main chum of the Prima Gadim is that if you rehydrate it, if you make it edible again, then it becomes treif again. That's the chum of the Prima Gadim. And the Chasam Sofer assumes the same thing.
So what if you have meat that became inedible, ate like an eight, and then became edible again? Says the Prima Gadim, it becomes meat again. And the Chasam Sofer agrees. Because the Chasam Sofer has a long tshuva where he assumes that. The Prima Gadim is right here. It's also in the Pesach Tshuva. The main person who argues on the Prima Gadim is the Shach himself. The Shach is very explicit in Siman Kuf Yud Dalet that they used to buy karkom, this spice from the Goyim. And some people said you can't eat the spice from the Goyim because sometimes it has strings of meat in it by accident. And the Shach says perfectly mutter to eat the spice. Why? Because I know how they make this spice. They make it out of all dried out things. And sometimes like a piece of meat, like it's dried out and left by accident. But that meat became dried out and inedible, and it's really kosher. Treif meat, it's really kosher. And he says, but then when they make it into something, it becomes edible again. He says, it doesn't matter. Once it became inedible, it became kosher, and it stays kosher forever. So the Shach himself, and they quote here also, the Shvus Yaakov, who's the same as the Michus Yaakov, says the Shach in Siman Kuf Yud Dalet, Sekhan Kuf Aleph, and the Michus Yaakov, they say that it is kosher pariv forever. And they quote the Noda Behuda here as having an in-between shita. Says the Noda Behuda, and this is very complicated, it's really much more complicated than this. Says the Noda Behuda, he says, based on all kinds of shitas that we don't paskin like, but okay. Says the Noda Behuda, he says it depends. If it was kosher meat, then it becomes parif. If it was treif meat, then it becomes treif again. Says it depends. If it was treif meat that you processed and made it inedible and then edible again, it becomes treif again. Treif becomes treif again when it becomes edible. But if it's kosher meat, and you make it inedible, it loses its tam basar. Even if you make it edible again, it's still not basar. It's still parif. What's the reason? The reason is very simple. Because in treif meat, it's a chefta of treif. So when it's inedible, it can't be usher to eat. But it's still inherently treif. So when it becomes edible again, it becomes treif again. Basar, you're just not supposed to mix its taste with milk. It's only usher to mix the taste of meat with milk, right? Meat and milk is only usher if it has a taste, if you can taste the meat and the milk. So basar is not inherently treif. Just you're not supposed to mix that taste with milk. Once it loses its taste, it lost its taste. You can make it edible again, but it doesn't have a real taste of meat anymore. So it becomes parv. Just like these other examples. If a taste of meat becomes weakened, it becomes insignificant and parv. If a taste of treif becomes weakened, it stays treif, because it's fundamentally treif. Okay, halacha l'maisa, how does this affect gelatin? And everyone got a chance to read the article to see that's a little more complicated than this. It's very, very late. Okay, you know, we didn't totally finish this simon today. What day of the week is it? Tuesday? We didn't totally finish this simon today. We didn't even finish our discussion of gelatin. I just don't want to spend any more minutes because after 5 o'clock, it's really a violation of the Eighth Amendment to continue giving shir. I could tell by your face how well you know the Constitution. Whether you get it or not. It's okay. I'm not saying it's important. I'm not saying you have to be Torah bound today. But that's cruel and unusual punishment. We'll pick up Amir Tashem on Sunday. We'll just finish up the discussion of gelatin for 2 minutes. And we will learn Sif Yud Aleph, which is not so long. And we'll continue with Simen Peches. Simen Peches is a pretty short simen. The plan for Sunday is to finish up Simen Pei Zayin, learn Simen Peches, and certainly get ahead if you're finished in Peches and Seder, then go on to some Peites. I don't know that we'll touch on it in Sunday Shir yet. I might have to wait till Tuesday Shir, but certainly feel free to get a head start. You'll get the board, Nizala, please.
Because the answer to my big question, I never